We live in a fantasy world now. Reality has been destroyed.
This is the time that we really need to pay attention.
The probabilities are overwhelmingly on gold's side.
That is the best environment to see gold increase its value.
Welcome to Palisades Gold Radio. I'm your host, Tom Bojovic. Joining me today is Vince Lancey, founder of Echo Bay Partners and frequent contributor to Zero Hedge. How are you today, Vince?
I'm good. Thanks, Tom.
So why don't we start by giving us a little bit about your background and the different areas that you've traded in and how you've gained your knowledge?
Sure. Well, I speak with people about several areas, and they're actually all interrelated. Options, derivatives, risk management, and then when you get into specific commodities, it would be energy and precious metals. I've become more known for metals. I think it's because there aren't really a lot of, in my opinion, analytical people actually talking about it other than very broad macro terms. But this knowledge base that I have comes from, I started as a clerk for a company called Cooper Neff. And they were one of the biggest market making options firms on the NYMEX and COMEX and Chicago floor back in the days when there was CRT and Cooper Neff and Susquehanna. And I worked for them. I got my training there. That was a very hard education. And then I started my own firm. And I had a firm on the floor for 10 years. And then I went off the floor and started managing money for a couple hedge funds. And that's what I do now.
Excellent. And what I like about your analysis, and you release frequent videos on your Twitter, and you really just call it like you see it. It's less about, you know, emotions and, you know, news on the markets. And it's more of a, you know, technical and fundamental based analysis. So why don't we talk a little bit about bonds? What's happening with bonds this week? And how far do you think we are from seeing some type of yield curve control?
Well, sure. First, I think you know that I can be emotional as well, or I guess passionate would be the pretty word for it. But yeah, you're right. The idea is, you know, when I don't have an axe to grind, if I don't have a bias, then hopefully, I think people that listen to what I have to say get something out of it on risk management. So, you know, your question about bonds, I think, is really relevant because no one's been talking about them for a long time. And all of a sudden, as of a day ago, they're in the news. And they were the catalyst for the market's behavior on Thursday and today on Friday. And what happened was, and I think the terminology, this might be a little bit wonky, but I think people would appreciate this. If you read blogs like Zero Hedge and other financial alt blogs, you'll hear things like financial blogs, like the bid to cover ratio was low. And you'll hear things like the indirect interest was low. And what they mean is yesterday we had a 7-year treasury auction. And that treasury auction, the bid to cover, which is how subscribed or oversubscribed the event is, was, I think, 2-1, when usually it's 2.4-1, something like that. And that is a sign of very low domestic interest. There's not as many people trying to buy it. And then on top of that, the foreign interest, which is reflected in something called indirects, so they're indirectly trying to buy our bonds, was low. And I don't know what the number was. It was like, I don't know how the number is measured, but I know that empirically, I mean, I know that relativistically, it was a low number, like 70%, normally 40% was a low number. So the weird thing is, right, and the strange thing was you could see bad numbers in the past and not have a violent reaction like you had yesterday, on Thursday, I should say, and today. But we had a massive reaction yesterday, and things that were correlated and related to each other broke down and everything moved as one. And it was, in my opinion, behaviorally very small version of what happened when the pandemic clipped in and got really worried. So I think to answer your question about bonds specifically, something happened yesterday that made people think, oh my God, we could actually raise rates. I think that's what happened.
Excellent. So what are your thoughts on Powell's speech this week?
Everything he said, and the specifics elude me for the moment because I'm still in trading mode, but everything he said was a reaffirmation of we're not going to raise rates. This is what he said. This is my takeaway. We're not going to raise rates until unemployment is under 4%. We're not worried about inflation being over 2%. It can go as high as 3% and we don't care. We're not going to change our policies. We're going to continue to be incredibly accommodative. And the market responded well to that. The markets responded well to that, but nothing got very frothy. But, you know, here we are in the stock market. you know, 5% off of all-time highs, maybe less now. So I think what Powell said was no different than what he said before. He said it again. And that in and of itself, you would think that would go a long way. But I think the market's getting tired of hearing that. And that's why we had the reaction we had to the auction yesterday.
And just to kind of go over this, can you give us a simple explanation, Vince, of, let's say, take the behavior of the bond market yesterday, and can you give us an idea of how that affects the rest of the markets and kind of what it can signal for people, just as a simple understanding?
Sure. You know, so much is discussed that the basics are just forgotten about. And there's a narrative that needs to be understood. And the narrative is what you think about to see if it makes sense. And here's the old narrative that makes sense. For whatever reason, people didn't want to buy bonds yesterday, or Thursday, I should say. And those people said, for the risk that I'm taking in bonds, I need a bigger yield. So the bond market sells off, interest rates go higher. And what that does is interest rates going higher creates people that are in stocks to say mechanically, oh, well, if I can get 40 more basis points, then I'll take some profits in stocks and put them in the bonds. So you have what's called internally, traditionally, it's called a rotation. Bonds sell off, people rotate out of stocks into bonds, people rotate out of gold and out of silver and into the dollar. And then you hear people say risk off. But the bond market led it. So the bond market rebounded after people started taking their risk off, but the bond market led it. So when you take these mechanics that I strung together in whole, you're looking at a stagflation fear. Inflation, bonds sell off, stagnation, the economy's not doing well. So it's almost like the market was behaving as if the Fed might raise rates. Even if they don't raise rates, we don't think the economy has enough oomph in it to keep going. But as you, I'm sure you see, Tom, the price of raw materials has been going up substantially over the last couple of months. So it's, I have to say, when you take the narrative and you put it together, it's a stagflation moment where people start to worry.
So Vince, of course, this is a very, very complex market environment. And you wrote in one of your recent articles that correlations do not matter now. So can you give us some examples of what these correlations, let's say, traditionally were that are no longer working?
Sure. They will matter again, but there are long periods of time where they don't matter. So let's say it's 5 years ago and you're trading gold and you look at the market and you say, gold is going down. And you say, okay, well, gold's denominated in dollars. The dollar is going up. So there's an inverse correlation. The dollar goes up. It takes less dollars to buy gold. The price of gold should go down. And that relationship's what we call robust. It's almost in real time the way that relationship goes. Then about 2 years ago, gold started behaving independently of the dollar in the way that I think gold bulls are happy about, that it started to go up even if the dollar wasn't weaker. The dollar could be flat or higher and gold would go up. And I would call that a repricing. That would be a correlation breaking down. And now we're seeing, I think over the last 6 months, last 3 months, definitely, that when the dollar is strong, gold gets smacked. But when the dollar is weak, rarely does gold have the rally that it could. But to speak to your comment directly, a lot of stock investors are talking about fundamentals not being important anymore. And that's a concern for those people who do pay attention to fundamentals. You have a whole generation, you know, millennials and Zoomers after that, who have no real deep belief in fundamentals. Well, if you take fundamentals a step further and you say, well, the fundamentals no longer matter as much because I'm buying something because of FOMO or whatever, take it a step further, then the macro doesn't matter. If the macro doesn't matter, then correlations break down. So the gold dollar correlation is not working right now. People are looking for another correlation. They'll say it's interest rates. And that may be true. But the point is, everything's a moving target right now. And the market is trading on one thing and one thing alone. And that is flow. The more money comes in, the higher it goes. The more money comes out, the lower it goes. Fundamentals don't matter until whatever is going on right now is over. Hope that helps.
Yep, absolutely. So let's take the example of GME recently. Can you explain why the broader market could go down as hedge funds are going to have to sell their long positions in order to cover their shorts in individual heavily shorted stocks, like exactly like GME, as they start to go up? And why is this a cancer on the psychology of the market?
Well, let's put it this way. Just to give you a little historical perspective, in 1987, and that was before I was trading, before I was involved in the markets, but it was a history lesson that one of the older guys gave me. the gold market was called in 1987 when Black Friday or Black Monday, when the market tanked, the stock market tanked, gold apparently was called limit up, and then it came in limit down. And the explanation that we find out afterwards was anybody who was using gold as a hedge against their stock portfolio sold their hedge to cover their margin calls, to shore up their position. And what you saw is you saw the hedge defeat itself. So when you take that concept and you apply it in this day and age, and GME is, you know, a very small company, it's not important in the big picture. How could a little company that goes to $500 when it was trading $20 a month ago have that kind of an effect on the broader indices and, you know, what's going on there? And I think it had a pronounced effect for a couple reasons. One is it shows how much this marketplace is leveraged to easy money. So I can short a stock and take that money and buy indices. Now, that may not seem like a big deal. Not everyone is short GME, but apparently the ones who are short GME were very leveraged. So they had to close longs to cover shorts on GME, which made someone else, and you had a cascading effect. And I think mechanically, that's what happened. You had people that had losses that kind of, it's a herd mentality. Now, how that translates into a psychological damage to the market or a cancer on the market psychology is quite simply tied to, if I'm a 70-year-old retiree and I see GME go up to 500 and then I see stocks go down, I don't say, oh, regression to the mean, fundamentals, this, that, they'll fix that. I say this, I'm worried. I don't understand. Get me out. So that's the psychological cancer. People will just go to the sidelines and say, I don't get it. Mm-hmm. So that's the flight to safety or risk off concept. And if this keeps happening, and you know it has happened in several stocks, it's to the long-term detriment of the health of the marketplace. Mm-hmm. And I think what we're seeing is part of that right now.
And I think that really leads into my next question, which is, can you remind our listeners why it's so important in this market not to risk anything you can't afford to lose and to control your FOMO?
Yeah, to not risk anything that you're not willing to lose is predicated on the fact that you may have been given easy money for 6 months, but when that ends, it'll be what they call a rug pull and your leverage will be called in. What I mean by that is, you know, my grandparents, they were Great Depression people. And my grandmother would say to me, you should have 90 days of money in cash before you put any money in stocks. Now, let's say that I was my grandmother, right? I would not have made as much money as a lot of people are making right now in the rally. And that's bad because if there is inflation, then everyone else's ability to cope with a higher cost of living is going to have more cash to go with it. But if the market craps out first, anybody who had $5 in the market buying $15, when that FOMO goes away, you're left with reality. Mm-hmm. And I think if anybody has gambled, as I have, there is a moment when you throw the dice and craps, or when you're waiting for the card to be turned over, and that's the high. The dice are spinning on the table, and that's the high. Mm-hmm. And when the dice settle, that's the reality. And the dice has not settled for the FOMO crowd right now because either A, it's money they can afford to lose because it's mom's money. B, it's money they can afford to lose because they're not worried about it. Or C, they're just in denial. Mm-hmm. And when the dice stop spinning and they settle, you're going to see, I think, a generation possibly of people ruined. And that's concerning to me. Hope that answers your question.
Yeah. So how does this end, Vince? You know, exactly what you're just talking about. Obviously, it's impossible to say how we get there, but what does this end game look like?
Well, I don't know, because every time I think I know, I don't. And that's important, I think, to keep me sane. Mm-hmm. Well, why don't we try and draw a path? This ends with, well, I believe this has to end with, and this is a very simple statement to make, but I'll refine it. It either ends with extreme inflation or extreme deflation. Now, I won't say hyperinflation yet, but I know that's a lot of people are talking about that, and we can address that as well if you like. But if you look at the economy as, say, an old car with a bad carburetor, and the Fed is just pressing on the gas, putting gas in the carburetor and the stock market's going up, the engine's revving, but inflation's not moving, the market's not moving. What ends up happening is either the carburetor or jets or whatever they're called snap open and the inflation takes off, or the spring breaks and we have deflation. So to put that in less analogous terms, if the Fed mismanages what's going on right now and pulls liquidity out of the market, we could have a depression. And right now we have a two-tiered economy. They call it a K. The economy is not doing so well, but the stock market is one way to look at it. Mm-hmm. And if the stock market does poorly, then you have no hope of the economy recovering, mm-hmm. because then there'll be no money to reinvest within the economy. So that's one aspect of it. The other aspect is if they don't tighten and they let the easy money keep going, which I believe is what's going to happen, you will have a default, a slow motion. We discussed this prior, a slow motion default on our treasuries, which by that, I don't mean a literal default. I mean, we're just going to continue to print until the dollar is debased to the point where we don't have to worry about our debts anymore. The government supports itself on the back of the public, which supports it. So they will tax the public, either literally or figuratively with a debased dollar. I believe this ends with a hyperinflation type of situation. I'm not saying it's coming tomorrow or 6 weeks from now or 6 months from now, but I am saying that I think the government, our government, and most governments in the world are more worried about depressionary deflation than inflation. So I think they're going to opt for that evil as opposed to a depression. My short answer is, I think we may have depressionary collapses, let's say like yesterday or today was one of those, but I think it ends with inflation in a big way. So I think it ends with something like a reset, although I wouldn't call it that, mm-hmm. but they are.
So how does Bitcoin play into all of this, Vince? What is your thinking behind the recent moves in Bitcoin? And could it be a canary in the coal mine for hyperinflation?
Well, it's definitely a canary in the coal mine. I wouldn't know if it's for hyperinflation, but the Bitcoin phenomena is FOMO. And I am pro Bitcoin. Not, you know, you'll hear a lot of guys say, I'm pro the technology, but not necessarily Bitcoin. I'm pro Bitcoin. I understand enough to do that. And I'm pro Ether and I'm pro what crypto does. I think it might be getting ahead of itself. If you look very quickly at crypto in general and Bitcoin specifically, they offer two things. Half of them will tell you that it's a store of value, and half of them will tell you that it's currency. So one is telling you it's money, and one is telling you it's currency, and they're not the same things. Mm-hmm. Bitcoin is a concept whose time has come. It is the network, and it's the message on the network. It is the wire that connects two landlines. It's going to be adapted or adopted by governments in some form or co-opted and used for digital money. We're getting digital money. That's coming. There's no doubt about that. I can't tell you like how advantageous it is to a government to have digital money, just not Bitcoin. But to speak to your point, it's hard for me to give an opinion on what the price of Bitcoin should be because it's a demand-decided product. Like when people make price predictions in gold or Bitcoin, there's no fundamentals to go on. There's only demand and there is a known supply side. So do I think the price of Bitcoin and Ether, actually, I want to include that, are too high right now? Yes. Do I think it's because it's a bad product? No. I think there are two things that are weighing on the market right now. Even though it's doing well today, despite the volatility in other assets, mm-hmm. there are two things that make me worried about Bitcoin. If I was just naked long Bitcoin, I'd be worried. One is there will be regulatory information coming down the pipe that's going to hurt it. Mm-hmm. So on a regulatory front, if they can't restrict the product itself, the supply of the product or the network, they're going to restrict access to the network. So regulatory, they'll demonize some exchanges or they'll prohibit. You see this happening in India right now. So the first problem I think is it's very susceptible to very, very bad news that comes out. I could just really wash it out. Mm-hmm. The other aspect of it that I think is keeping a lid on it right now is because I think a lot of people are playing games with the market. And because it's not regulated, if you want to sell it, you can make a statement that's bullish and then you can sell it to take profit. I think the adaptation or adoption of Bitcoin is going to increase exponentially, geometrically, linearly, I don't know, but it's not going to go backwards until the government says something. So PayPal, MicroStrategy, it's going to keep happening. At some point, enough people are going to demand it. It's going to be demand driven. If enough people have Bitcoin, then Starbucks is going to take Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. And when that happens, it will go up because of broader adoption, not because it's a store of value. And I think I have no idea what the value is, but to say $100 trillion, you know, that's, I've heard that come out of a couple people's mouths. I think it's just, a lot of it is hype for FOMO, but I wouldn't short it. I'm short the exchange, but I wouldn't short the actual physical Bitcoin.
So how does this all apply to your thinking about silver right now, Vince? We know there's still some unresolved SLV, you know, possible sourcing issues. So what's your take on the silver squeeze right now?
Well, the conventional wisdom in the precious metal set is there's 500%, you know, outstanding of silver out there. And they're right. That's part of the product. There can definitely be a real silver squeeze, but not while we're talking about it. It won't happen while you're talking about it. Too many people are watching it right now. You're not going to see silver go to the moon because silver is not game stock. It's an industrial commodity that governments need. So they can't prohibit ownership of it, but they're certainly not going to let an industry go under, which, you know, there's precedent for this with what they did with the Hunt brothers. Mm-hmm. And there's precedent in what they just did with GameStop in terms of how they throttle the ability to buy it. They'll throttle the ability to buy it. How do I think this ends? I think whoever is short silver in a big way, they're probably going to cover it and someone else will be short silver because the shorts won't go away. Someone else will be short silver and then we'll have a short squeeze. When? I don't know. But I think it could be substantial. And I think as long as the big players don't get hurt, like the big banks, I don't think the government's going to step in and stop that. Mm-hmm.
So you and I were discussing earlier about a COMEX default, and you see it differently than most people think. You think it'll be more of a slow bleed versus a dramatic end. Can you tell us more about this?
Well, start with a cliche. If we're talking about it, right, then it's not going to happen. A watch pot never boils. Let me be the CMA. I'm an exchange, and I have a brand. And if I default on a product, my whole exchange goes under. Mm-hmm. It does, because you're not trustworthy. It's like a creditor finds out that you didn't pay a bill to someone else. Your credit rating is ruined and you're out of business. You're out of business. That's, you know, I could be wrong, okay? But if I were running a business like the CME and I cared about my business, as I'm sure they do, I would not ever let something like that happen. A microcosm of that would be a market gets frothy, like a palladium type of market. Palladium, they didn't default on palladium. Well, what do? There are so many things you do before you default. Market structure dictates you raise margins to get the froth out. Market structure dictates you close the market. You don't default. You just slow it down. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that's going to happen. And your end result is it's in the rules somewhere that they don't have to deliver silver. They can just, we're going to settle in cash. Now, you know, when that happens, if you're long silver futures, you're not going to make money. It's going to go down. If you're long physical silver, you'll probably do a lot better. But if we get close to that, it's a problem. The CME, to give you an example, is not going to let COMEX go under because they're the biggest bond market in the world. They make their revenues off of bonds and energy and derivatives. They're not going to let a whole business model be destroyed by one thing. They'll be bailed out by the government, but, you know, possibly, right? Like Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac were, but they're not going to let it go under. Mm-hmm. That can't happen. That's the too big to fail now. It was the banks, now it's the exchanges. So that's not going to happen. That's my opinion.
And you were mentioning the Hunt brothers, Vince, and this kind of brings to mind a question about if they're trying to go after one specific entity, let's say like the Hunt brothers, is it going to be harder for them to affect more of a decentralized community like we're seeing right now?
Yeah, that's all warfare, right? It used to be communism versus capitalism, United States versus Russia. Now it's the barbarian hordes versus a central state in terms of the invaders versus the army. And while I think tactically they have to change, you know, we can go into what happened with the Hunt brothers as a history lesson. Tactically, their tactics will change and their MO will change, but their goals will be the same. So if there's a problem in any market, whether it be a short squeeze or an imbalancing or, you know, not to be, you know, I can put on a tinfoil hat with the best of them, but it's just the way you're running your business. Mm-hmm. You seek to restore order. And you do that by when things are too fast, you slow them down. And you slow them down, like an example of the Hunt brothers, You make the trades liquidation only. So the Hunt brothers were leveraged and the banks were not compared to the Hunt brothers. So when you make it liquidation only and I'm borrowing money against my position on silver, they were staking their silver, taking loans on it and buying more silver with it. That's leveraged, okay? Mm-hmm. So a 10 cent move in silver, an adverse 10 cent move in silver caused them 10 times that amount. So all you have to do when you're going up against a leveraged person is play the long game. You and I are playing poker. I'm a better poker player than you. I don't know, but let's just say that.
Definitely.
But you have a much bigger bankroll. So yeah. You slow play me. You just keep slow playing and you chip away until at some point I fall off a cliff. I get a bad hand and I go under. So when you're playing against the Hunt brothers or against anyone who's taking you on, you play slower and you play longer. So how does that translate into this modern era when there is no Hunt brothers? You know, the press is going to want to say it's Reddit, Wall Street Bets. It's not. It's not. In fact, they're probably being played right now by people that are in power. Centralized situations like states and exchanges are definitely being attacked by decentralized situations because it's a concept whose time has come. But do not underestimate the power of incumbency. So while there may be barbarians at the gate, you know, the gate is owned by the establishment. So all they have to do is slow them down and then figure it out. So can they do what they did with the Hunt brothers? No, they can't do it because, you know, the information gets out a lot more than it used to, right? We're talking about that as well. The dissemination of information is a lot faster. You can't obfuscate it easily, but now you can misinform and not even to be paranoid about it. Now you can disseminate your information a lot faster. You don't have to go through the press. You can counter. The counterattack is just as flexible, provided you have smart people doing it. So if you're worried about this decentralized attack coming from all fronts, all you have to do is close the gate and disperse your own counterattack. And I guess what I mean by that metaphor is, as long as you control the situation, you can slow it down. Coming back to Bitcoin, if Bitcoin is listed in futures, which it is, and that product isn't doing very well for now compared to the actual physical Bitcoin, well, that's because decentralization is winning, but they can use other mechanisms. If you can't shut Bitcoin down, you can make it heal. You can co-opt it. You can do things like that. And so when you're talking about things like the government or an industry versus the Hunt brothers, it's one-on-one. But when you're talking about against a million people, then you use proxies to fight your battle for you. So you empower banks and you let them take care of it because they have the networks. I'm dancing around it, but I think my point is they will slow it down. They will seek to regulate it. They will seek to ring fence their franchises and protect themselves and put walls up around the establishment to protect itself while all this stuff is going on the outside. So it'll happen. It'll just happen on a slower time frame.
Mm-hmm. Perfect. So you recently said that gold will be the last thing to rally huge after inflation can no longer be denied. Then it's off right to the races.
Yeah.
Is that what you think is what we're really waiting for? Or let's say the next big move in gold is going to be focused around is an inflation move higher that can't be denied?
That's a history lesson. Let's just put it this way. The price of gold during the inflation era of the late 70s, early 80s peaked after they started getting inflation under control. It peaked when they started attacking it. So food went up in price. Energy went up in price. Things that are used from the bottom up went up in price. And then that funneled to gold. If you look at it as a flow situation, commodities that are used and consumed went up in price because of debasing of the dollar, and gold went up last. And back then, they probably weren't as good as managing the price of gold as they are today. And by that, I mean, if inflation is an issue for people at the individual level, they're not going out and buying gold, they're going out and buying food. They're going out and buying gasoline for their car. And while gold has had a very strong run from 2000 and we'll say 15 through recently, that wasn't inflationary. That was, I mean, the way I define inflationary, that wasn't inflationary at the grassroots level. That was central banks, especially in Europe and Asia, buying gold to shore up their own balance sheets. So central banks bought gold. That gold demand over the last 10 years has been a big driver of the price of gold. The next driver higher will be, I believe, inflation. And I believe gold will go up last. But when I say things like so it can't be denied anymore. Look, the price of gold is a headline maker. And if you're a government, you don't want the price of gold to be in the headline too much. You will rarely see gold go up 2% in a day. You will see it go down more than 2% a day. That's not random Brownian motion. That's governments making sure that the price of gold, not never, but almost never, conveys that we have a problem inflationary-wise. And when they can't keep it down anymore, it's too late. So that's my point.
Excellent. So Vince, are there specific things that you're looking for before you, you know, really get long into gold right now?
Well, you know, I look at things, I guess, through three lenses: secular, macro, and micro. Secular meaning beyond macro. Like, I believe that there are changes coming that will affect us for 50 to 100 years. Kind of like a secular change would be a reset concept is a secular change. Mm-hmm. I think a generation could be lost in either a depression or hyperinflation. A macro change would be a macro way to look at it. So I'm bullish from a secular point of view. In a macro point of view, I'll change from week to week. I was bullish from November to last week, and that did well. I should be bearish right now, but I'm not, and I missed it. So on a secular basis, I'm bullish, but on a macro basis, I think I've gone from bullish to bearish neutral. On a micro basis, I'll be long or short during the day. Mm-hmm. But to answer questions for like an investor, I think if you don't know what to do with your money, you have to have, and this is trite, but it's because it's true, you have to have a percentage of your money in an asset that is low volatility and you don't care if it goes down. Gold is a hedge for all the imperfections that we haven't thought of that can happen. Gold is a black swan hedge. It is insurance against the unknown. It's not perfect insurance, but it's insurance. So when would I load up on gold? Well, as a trade, I'd load up on it $50 higher. As an investor, I'd load up on it $50 lower. Mm-hmm. It could drop another $150. I'm not saying it won't, with silver going nowhere. But for the next move higher, I'm going to be looking to buy silver, not gold. I'm tactically flexible, so I can't really answer that. I have a long-term view, but I'm flexible.
Excellent, Vince. Why don't you mention, you use a lot of Mike or Michael's charts quite a bit. So why don't you mention him and what he provides?
Sure, sure. Michael Moore is a technician, and there are few technicians who I believe are objective, whether intentional or not. But Michael has been, I knew Michael from the floor. And as a floor trader, I did not trade directionally. I was not a technician. I traded arbitrage and volatility, you know, complex stuff. But I didn't have an opinion. You'd say to me, where's the market going? I'm like, I have no idea. I have no idea. I would just trade where it was going. And Michael used to sell technical levels on the floor, and 80% of the floor used his stuff. And the floor went away and he started a business. And his service is, he has technical analysis. He has hedge funds. He has trading firms. And he has one or two, maybe three energy firms that subscribe to his service. And he's been doing a lot in precious metals lately. And he called this market from 1500 to 1900 in gold. And he called it from 1950 down to here, actually, really. So he owns a company called Moore Analytics. And we have a relationship going back from the floor. He has clients. And those clients, when they have a directional opinion, Michael will put me on the phone with them and I will say, if you want to do it with options, you can do it this way. Mm-hmm. And in return, when I say to Michael, I don't know which way the market's going today, can you help me out? And he'll help me with that. So I do something called the Gold Fix nearly every day. And a big part of that is I discuss for subscribers, his subscribers, not mine. My goal, the Gold Fix is free, how to use his research. And it's quite good. I really can't say enough about his work, except that it's cheap. And I'm not shilling for him. It's cheap. It's just, it's ridiculous for the work he does. And I recommend it. Moore Analytics is the name of the firm. And I think it's moreanalytics.com. But if you shoot in for to the Gold Fix, you can get an education on how to use that in the mornings as well. But that's it. It's, you know, I use his stuff almost exclusively for my triggers. When I have an opinion on the market and I have my own system, let's say I see something that makes me think it's going up, mm-hmm. right? I'm looking for a trigger. And so I will use his information to tell me if I should be panicking, if I should be FOMOing, or if I should be patient. Mm-hmm. And that's basically it. And It's very good. He's been doing it. We've known each other for almost 20 years. And I've been a paying subscriber for 10. Now he gives it to me because I do this for him. Mm-hmm. And he helps me, basically.
Excellent. Perfect, Vince. Is there anything else you'd like to share with us as we wrap up here?
No, I think we touched everything that was relevant. What do you think?
Absolutely. Share with our listeners where we can find more of your writing and your thoughts and also the Gold Fix, Vince.
Sure. I'm semi-regular on Zero Hedge, and you know, I'm not an employee of Zero Hedge, but I'm familiar with the culture very much. I've written for them on background in the past, and I'm a fan of the analysis that comes out of there. So I'll write something called the Gold Fix, or I'll write something occasionally about markets. Probably, I'd say 4 out of 5 days a week, I put something up there. And if it's good, it'll go on the front page. Every morning between 8 and 9, I do a Gold Fix broadcast, which is anywhere between 5 and 20 minutes long. And every broadcast has, I'll review Michael's numbers. So subscribers to his product tune in, because I got news for you. Michael's writing is very high-end wonky, and it took me years to figure it out. So I help people use his work. The second thing that we talk about during the Gold Fix is, you know, something that people ask me about, you know, how do I do this in technical analysis? How do I do some options? So I'll throw something in there that's educational. And then the third thing we'll do in there is we'll talk about if I have any positions on and what I'm going to be doing. That's between 8 and 9 in the morning. Usually it's pre-recorded. I was using Periscope, but they're changing now. So as for the time being, I'm using pre-recorded Zoom. I'll probably go on Twitter Media on that. But there's no cost. There's nothing about that. It's just fun for me. And I think people appreciate it because the audience is getting something out of this. And so am I. I'm sharing my process with them, which helps me prep for the trading day. And they're getting a peek into how a trader's mindset works. Mm-hmm. So I do that every day. I'm on Twitter, VLanceyPictures.
Perfect. Excellent, Vince. Thank you very much for your time today.
Thanks for having me.
This podcast is for general informational purposes only. Nothing on this podcast should be taken as investment advice. Guests on this show are not compensated for their appearance. Listeners are urged to educate themselves and make their own decisions. Do not base any investment decisions on the information contained. To view our full disclaimer, please visit our website.